Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. I like to eat. I imagine a lot of you out there also like to eat. And we sometimes have shows on American Variety about food and cooking or culinary arts, if you want to get fancy about it. Recently, I had one on the slow food and farm-to-table movements with the chef of a well-known restaurant in Nashville, Tennessee, and someone who's an expert on all kinds of issues relating to food and the production of food and policy about food and so on. A while back, we had an interview with the state chef of Florida. That was interesting. So even apart from liking to eat in general, I also like fine dining. And for our show, that means sometimes keeping up with trends in cuisine and restaurant cooking. My guest today is going to help us do that. He is executive chef Richard Rosendale of the renowned Greenbrier Resort in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. Welcome, Rich.
Thank you very much, Court.
Nice to have you on. So there is a competition that's basically like the Daytona 500 of cooking or the World Cup of culinary competition. And it's not on the Food Channel. It's not one of those reality shows. It's something called the Bocuse d'Or, a French word. The first word, Bocuse, is the name of a famous chef named Paul Bocuse. And d'Or is D'OR, so it's of gold. So it's the gold medal of Bocuse, right, that's held every 2 years in France. So many countries have competitions that last for a year to choose the team they'll send. And in 2013, this competition is held every 2 years in January. In 2013, Chef Rosendale, our guest, was the USA entrant. Now, he didn't win, but he had, I'm sure, quite an experience. So, Rich, what was it like to be there and compete in Bocuse d'Or?
Well, thank you, Court. It was really almost like having a second job as far as preparing for it. I think a lot of people don't realize that though the competition only lasts for 5 hours, it's really a commitment that leads up to this kind of pinnacle. I mean, it's like a year-long preparation for the competition. And then when you actually get there, it's almost like being at a soccer game with fans that are screaming and loud instruments, people paint their faces. And it's a celebration of world cuisine, but it's like being at a soccer game.
I bet it wasn't always like that, but has probably become more like that in recent years. So is that whole circus atmosphere distracting, or are you so focused and so prepared that they could be setting off bombs around you and you'd still do your job?
Well, there's no question that it requires a high degree of focus and concentration while you're cooking. It's very difficult to do that because as you're cooking in these very small kind of cubicles, these kitchens that are lined up in this huge venue side by side, each kitchen holding a different country team, and the team is made up of myself and an assistant, a co-me, if you will.
Mm.
And we're basically cooking for 5 hours, and at the end of the 5 hours, you have to put up this very elaborate presentation of beef that is displayed on a platter, and it's carried around for the international press and all of the spectators to take pictures of, and then, of course, for the judges to taste. And then after that, you also have to put up a fish course, and it makes for a spectacular view for the audience, and the food is very over the top, you know, wild presentations and a high degree of craft that goes into each dish.
It does actually sound like some of those cooking competitions on TV, although longer and more elaborate and maybe multidimensional. So you mentioned that a team consists of just two people in every country, and if so, who was on your team?
Well, of course, myself is the team captain, and then also my assistant or co-me, Corey Siegel, who cannot be any older than 22 at the time of the competition. So I can't go in there with, you know, well-established, well-known chef. I mean, it has to be somebody that's at the apprentice level.
I think you're a pretty young guy yourself. I put you on the spot here. I gather you're in your mid-30s or so?
I'm 38 years old, and, you know, I've accomplished quite a bit for my age in my career, but I'm very fortunate to just work with a lot of very talented people around me for many, many years.
Well, I'll say you have accomplished a lot. Gosh, congratulations on being the U.S. entrant in the Bocuse d'Or competition. So what exactly did you prepare? I mean, don't get down to the level of the garnishes, I guess, but you mentioned a number of main dishes and that kind of thing. So kind of at the top level, what was it?
Well, just kind of on the surface, I mean, you could spend a lot of time going into the details of the dishes, but what I try to do is to kind of reimagine dishes from my childhood. One was a spinoff of a Yankee pot roast that my mom used to make, and I did it with braised oxtails, but the presentation involved very thin layers of black truffle and stuffed with mushrooms and chicken mousse inside of the oxtail. And then I also did a pave of beef, which is like a rectangular beef presentation. combination that was basically grilled, and then it was also crusted with a mushroom crust and brushed with a little bit of roasted garlic. But I tried to do dishes that really kind of conjured up memories from a taste standpoint from my childhood, but I delivered them in a very refined Boku store level presentation.
Well, you're making me hungry. Were the things, I mean, I'm sure that you chose those dishes early on during the preceding year when the competition in the U.S. was going on, and then once you were chosen to be the U.S. intern, I'm sure you rehearsed them many times, but are they still things that are at the level of what you might prepare in one of your restaurants at the Greenbrier, or were they completely over the top of anything anybody would do commercially?
Well, honestly, Cord, I mean, you know, it's really not practical to try to do all of those components on one dish in one of your restaurants. However, you can certainly take components out of there. You know, I did a carrot that was a beautiful presentation of carrot, again, kind of thinking of that Yankee pot roast and slow-cooked carrots that my mom would make when I was younger. We did a carrot that was cooked in carrot juice, and then we took that carrot juice and made a gel out of it, shaped it into like a noodle form, and wrapped it around the outside of the carrot so it looked kind of like a spiral. And then inside of the carrot was a very soft carrot puree. But that was one individual component that was on that beef dish. So you can take components out and use those in your restaurants, but typically not practical to take the entire dish because of all the work that goes into it.
Sure, that makes sense. Boy, I wish we could see on the radio here, we could see pictures of what it looks like. But you can go to the Greenbrier's website and find the restaurants. And, you know, hunt for, you know, just search, Google Rich Rosendale, R-O-S-E-N-D-A-L-E, Richard Rosendale, Greenbrier, Bocuse d'Or, B-O-C-U-S-E, D apostrophe O-R, and you'll find information about the contest, and you can see pictures of his preparations. So was it really stressful to get everything done in time? I mean, was it kind of down to the wire, Rich?
Well, you know, it's actually, to give you an idea, I mean, I was so well prepared for this competition from the standpoint of, like, the organization. I mean, I even built a replica of the kitchen here at the Greenbrier. So As long as nothing went wrong during the competition, there's no question you have a massive amount of work to do in 5 hours. And there's a lot that can go wrong. And it is stressful for a lot of people if you've never been in that kind of an environment before. I mean, not only do you have all of these spectators and all of these cameras from around the world, you also have some of the finest, well-known chefs from around the world that are walking around with clipboards critiquing you and looking over their shoulder at everything that you do. So that can conjure up a lot of stress for most candidates.
Is there a language issue? Do you need to be able to speak some French, or is it sort of multilingual there?
Well, fortunately, we had, you know, several people on the team that were able to speak French, and whenever I got in there the day of the competition, I really tried to just focus on getting prepared with the food, getting ready to cook, and a lot of people do speak English, so it's not like the language barrier is that much of an issue, but I really tried to not do much talking to any of the judges or anything and really kind of focus on the cooking and let someone else on the team do all the talking when necessary.
So out of the, I think, 24 countries that competed in 2013, where did the U.S. team place and who won?
Well, France got first place and the United States got seventh place. And obviously, I had hoped that we would have gotten on the podium. No U.S. candidate has ever done that before. I mean, in 20 years of the competition, the highest an American candidate has ever gotten was sixth place. And, you know, we were hoping to break through this year. But what I do think is that we really did have so many positives this year. I mean, the press exposure for the United States leading up to the competition was phenomenal. I think that is important to kind of get public awareness out there for the competition. We also, the preparation that went into getting ready for the competition here at the Greenbrier as far as having a replica kitchen built was huge. And we had more American supporters in France at the competition, you know, out in the bleachers watching the competition than we ever had in years past. So it was really very successful in many aspects. It just didn't necessarily reflect in the standings.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Executive Chef Richard Rosendale of the renowned Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia about his participation in the January 2013 Bocuse d'Or World Cup of Cooking in France. Richard, you said your team came in seventh, and the best that a U.S. team has ever done was sixth, and you were trying to get on the podium, which I assume is first, second, or third. So France won? Who came in second and third? And I guess also, what are the chances of North American countries doing much better? I mean, is there kind of a barrier there? Is it, you know, kind of skewed toward Europe?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I feel that, you know, we did a phenomenal job, and we really thought that when they were doing the awards ceremony that there was a possibility that we were going to be on the podium, and the podium is first, second, or third. This year, second came to Denmark, and then third place went to Japan, which actually is encouraging because this is only the second time in over 20 years of the competition that a non-European country had ever been on the podium. So, of course, we had hoped that would be the United States, but the fact that it was Japan, I think, is actually encouraging. And one of the reasons I believe that that had happened this year is the Boku store just this year had actually made a change that they had, that, you know, from the competition structure from years past, and that is that they really encouraged with everyone's dishes to show more of your country's representation on the plate. And Japan, who got third place, actually served their dish inside of a bento box. They served from the front, which is more embracing Japanese culture. So I think with the competition, they really are showing that the competition is changing, and they want to celebrate, you know, your culture and your country, whereas in years past, many of the competitors that have fared well were really doing a lot of, you know, French-based cuisine, regardless of what country they were coming from, where this year it's more of a celebration or encouraging you to really cook your style from your country and to reward the candidate for doing so.
Well, it's good. It sounds like they're getting more global in their perspective, which they certainly ought to be if it's called the Olympics of cooking, right? But I was reading that in the, 26 years maybe now that it's gone on, there have been 13 competitions so far, that France has won six of those, or nearly half, and then Scandinavia, oddly enough to me at least, does well. I don't think of Norway or Sweden as being hotbeds of culinary excellence, but they seem to do well. So it's maybe good, like you say, to notice that maybe the European bias, if there is one, is cracking around the edges, and they're starting to look at the goodness of cuisine and culinary arts in other countries and their cultures.
Well, you know, and the other thing is in years past, it's only, you know, the Boku store in the United States is really still pretty young. I mean, though we've had participation for several years, you know, Thomas Keller and Danielle Ballou, Jerome Bocuse, who have gotten involved with the competition just a few years ago, are really still in the early processes of establishing a foundation for the Boku store in the United States. And, you know, you don't run a marathon and expect to win it the first time out. And their involvement has really helped from the standpoint of the candidate being able to focus on the food and the cooking as opposed to worrying about fundraising and worrying about how they're going to pay for a competition in their training. So that takes a long time for it to really kind of reap any really solid results. But I do think that this year we've made a lot of really great strides that will be able to help the 2015 initiative.
It sounds like you've gotten the momentum going even more and increased the kind of the drive toward getting on that podium in the future. So I mentioned at the beginning Paul Bocuse, who's a very famous chef in France and is very little known here, I guess because he doesn't have any U.S. restaurants, huh? But I've eaten at one of his restaurants in France, in Lyon, called Bocuse Sud, or the South Bocuse, and it was quite an experience, as you might expect. So tell us a little about him. I don't know if you saw him at the competition or met him. He's a pretty old guy by now, huh?
Mr. Bocuse is he's in his mid-80s, and I know that the competition is held very close to his heart. He does make an appearance at the competition, and actually this year also, as he always does, has announced the winners. So it really has been a competition that in the United States may not be very well known, but it is beginning to change. He is considered, you know, an iconic French chef, and with the competition, I think you're starting to see more awareness in the United States. In fact, the Culinary Institute of America had actually just renamed one of their restaurants, which used to be the Escoffier restaurant, and it's now named after Paul Bocuse. So he really is a very important person in the history of cuisine. And the competition is really a pretty amazing thing when you think about how it brings so many cultures and countries together to compete on the world stage.
No, that's for sure. Were you in the mold of past U.S. Bocuse d'Or winners, you know, the ones who win in the U.S. level, or were you somehow different, and if so, in what way?
Well, definitely my involvement this year was, my role as a candidate was different than past candidates, for sure. Past candidates were typically coming from, you know, restaurant backgrounds, and I have a pretty large amount of competition experience. I've been in over 40 national and international cooking competitions. I was on the U.S. Culinary Olympic team, which is a five-chef cooking team, similar to the Bocuse store, not quite as, as many spectators and everything the way that the Bocuse is set up. But basically, I have a very strong competition background, and I do think that that was something that I was an asset. It definitely helped. And the other thing was that, you know, I actually had built a replica of the Bocuse store training kitchen here at the Greenbrier, and what's really interesting about that kitchen is not only is it built to the exact inch of the competition kitchen that you cook at in Lyon, France, but it's also built inside of what used to be a nuclear fallout shelter. It's a bunker that exists here at the Greenbrier behind a 28-ton blast door, which is certainly not typical of past initiatives.
That's right. That's amazing. I do remember now that one of the things that the Greenbrier is famous for is that it was a shelter of last resort for high government officials in the event of a nuclear war during the Cold War. So you're actually occupying that space. That's pretty amazing. A little bit of a dungeon feel to it, but I guess you're well protected from outside distractions, huh?
Well, you know, when you say a bunker, I mean, I think people kind of picture something out of a movie, like it's kind of going into this kind of dark corridor, but it's really a very nice kitchen. And we also have a room that's just down the hallway from that that we kind of refer to, and it's appropriately named as the War Room. And that's where we did all of our Bocuse store planning for the competition. We had many of the coaches that would come to the Greenbrier, and we would really kind of meet and plan. And very well-respected chefs, there is no question I was really supported phenomenally well with a host of very talented chefs from the United States. And we had Grant Atkins from Alinea as one of the coaches, Gabriel Kruther from The Modern in New York City. We also had Gavin Kasem, who was the head coach. So we really had a tremendous support team. And they would all come to the Greenbrier. We would meet in the War Room. And then we would go into the training kitchen and basically execute the training in there.
Well, amazing. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Chef Richard Rosendale of the Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia about his participation in the 2013 Bocuse d'Or cooking competition in France, kind of the Olympics of cooking, as it's often called. So, Rich, you mentioned the demands that winning the U.S. competition and being the U.S. entrant representative to that world competition in France, you mentioned the demands that that placed on you. So what was the U.S. competition like? I mean, was it did it go all year long? And, you know, where did it take place? Who were the judges? That kind of thing.
Well, the United States selection process took place at the Culinary Institute of America. And it was really set up very similar to the competition in Lyon, France. It was just a smaller scale. But you had basically four chefs that had remained in the finals, chefs that were selected from across the country. And this was the final stage of the selection process. You know, several applicants had applied, but through a few stages of the selection process, it was narrowed down to only four that had remained. And we went through the cooking competition, and the chefs that were the judges were, you know, obviously Thomas Keller and Daniel Ballou, Jerome Bocuse, I mean, you know, Alan Wong, I mean, very well-established chefs from across the United States. And a winner was selected, and really at that point, and this was in January of last year, at that point is really when the true work began, and that was getting prepared for Lyon. One of the things I wanted to point out is that this year, one of the major differences, whereas in years past, chefs would know an entire year out what they were going to be cooking. Lyon would tell you you're going to have beef and you're going to have halibut. Well, this year they didn't do that. This year they waited till much later in the year, and then they told you what you were going to be cooking for your beef platter. And then for the fish, they told you what fish it was going to be just, 2 months before the competition. And then the night before the competition, they gave you access to a market basket to go in and select the rest of the ingredients to complete your fish dish. So this was a very different year as far as training and planning for the Boku store, and it was a very different template than what they had done in years past.
You run a number of restaurants there at the Greenbrier, which is a very large resort. Was it hard to compete while being in charge of several restaurants at the same time?
You know, everybody asked me like how I was able to really kind of handle, you know, dealing with this such a busy year with playing so many different roles. I mean, yes, I'm the executive chef here at the Greenbrier. I oversee 13 kitchens, 7 full-service restaurants, you know, 185 chefs, and I'm a father of 2 and, you know, obviously the role of the Boku store. So I think organization as a candidate, it's really imperative that you don't kind of lose control and fall behind, because that's when you can begin to kind of get stressed out. That stress, you know, is something that you really have to keep control over whenever you get into the competition. But it was very difficult to manage all of those obligations.
How big a deal is this in the this competition in the world of chefs in the U.S.? I mean, basically, you know, the top of the mountain, is it something everybody dreams about doing, or is it sort of, you know, a side thing that a lot of people are aware of, but not that big a deal for many of them?
Well, you know, I think that this year is where we really made a lot of progress with public awareness for the competition, and that's why I say that, you know, you can't really measure the success based on what place you had gotten. It is a big deal in other countries. I mean, chefs are looked at as, you know, when they do the Boku store, I mean, that's like the pinnacle of cooking competitions.
Mm.
And in the United States, it's really only just starting to get traction here in the last couple of years. And this year, I mean, the media exposure, I mean, I never thought that at the beginning of this that I was going to be on the cover of the Washington Post magazine, and you know, on my way over to France, we were in the Wall Street Journal, was on CBS twice in 1 week. So that was kind of a bonus. Certainly can't be the driver as far as why you compete in the competition, but I do think that the more exposure it gets and the more public awareness, the more active participation you're going to have from other chefs from around the United States. But it's a big commitment to take on.
Sure, obviously it is. What's your own background as a chef? I mean, what was your training and so on, just quickly?
My background is I did 2 3-year apprenticeship programs, and I've traveled through Germany, Switzerland, Luxembourg, France, Italy, Norway. I did own my own restaurant for a few years in Columbus, Ohio, prior to coming to the Greenbrier, but a lot of it was just going through classical apprenticeship programs.
So, you know, we hear about schools like the Culinary Institute of America that you mentioned, or Johnson and Wales University, and places you can go and get a 4-year degree in culinary arts, and they're almost as expensive as Harvard. I mean, you know, you can spend $100,000 getting a degree to be a chef, but it sounds like to be at the top of your profession, it's not really still not necessary to do that, right?
You know, that's true, Court. I mean, I think that it's really different for each person. It's whatever way that you react to retaining knowledge and being successful. I mean, I did 2 3-year apprenticeship programs, but I also know people that have been very successful that never went to culinary school. But you really do have to think before you go into the culinary arts that it is expensive, and it takes lots of hard work, years of hard work and dedication until you really ever see a return on that investment. But I think that's true for anything.
As a young chef, you worked at places like the French Laundry in California, Napa Valley. I mean, some of the best restaurants in the country, if not the world. So imagine if you can place yourself in one of those locations, that's worth more than a degree.
Well, I did do stages around the country, and I did stage at the French Laundry, and I think that when you get into a network like that, you're operating and working in such a really high level of quality, and you can get into the right circle. You want to stay in that kind of a path in your career. I mean, if you surround yourself with talent and great people, it's going to rub off on you, and certainly companies like the French Laundry and Thomas Keller, who's been iconic in American cuisine, and even looking at what he's doing with the Boku store, is just tremendous. So any chef, you can't go wrong by going into a direction of Thomas Keller or the French Laundry or getting involved with the Boku store. I mean, good things are going to happen to you if you pay the price and work hard.
It's kind of the same in any profession, really. So what's your preferred style of cooking? I know you can do pretty much anything under the sun, and you probably do in those 7 restaurants at the Greenbrier, but, you know, personally, what do you like to do and eat the most yourself?
Well, I love to cook at home for my family, but I think that a lot of people, they look at me, I'm a young chef, and I'm working in a very old hotel, but I love that kind of contrast. I think it reflects in my food. I mean, I love taking traditional and classical flavors and kind of reimagining them. I mean, it's essentially what I did at the Boku store, where I took dishes like, you know, Yankee pot roast and transformed that into something that is very contemporary, using modern ingredients and modern techniques, but it's almost like origins and frontiers, starting at a place that everybody recognizes, but ending up in a more contemporary place.
Do you strive for using local seasonal ingredients, that kind of thing, a lot?
Well, not only do we strive for using local ingredients, but one of the neat things about the Greenbrier here is since I've been back here in the last 3 years, we actually even have our own 44-acre farm, and we grow 75% of all the produce for the entire hotel. And for a 750-room hotel, I mean, that is quite a commitment. And, you know, just something like tomatoes, we get about 3 tons of tomatoes every week during peak season.
Rich, what trends do you see in big restaurants in general, besides those you just described for your own restaurants right now?
Well, I think what we're seeing with a lot of restaurants is, number one, is, you know, kind of embracing of international cuisine and international flavors. I also think that, you know, the fine dining restaurant model has really changed. I mean, the formality of, you know, everything from dress to the expense and overhead of operating a very expensive restaurant, and really what people are comfortable in, we're seeing that really kind of shift and change. And I think you will continue to see that, where one of the neat things, I think, is kind of getting back to the origins of cooking, things like charcuterie, and embracing the craft of, you know, old recipes, traditional recipes, and really not losing touch of those, and really kind of getting back to the basics. You know, we've gotten so modern in so many ways. I think at times it's refreshing to kind of reflect back and look at traditional and classical dishes, and I think that you'll continue to see that evolve back to in the year to come.
Sounds like a good trend from the eater's standpoint. So what's the job market like now for young chefs? Is it, you know, kind of the recession seems like it's ending. Is it getting better now?
Well, you know, the good thing I tell people about getting into cooking is everybody eats. And once you learn how to be a cook and you can be a great chef and put on lots of different hats and do lots of different things within a restaurant or a hotel, there are so many different directions and options that you can go in once you get into the hospitality industry. But the one ingredient that you have to keep in mind is, you know, you're going to have to work hard. But I think that's true with anything. But if you're passionate about cooking and hospitality, the sky's the limit. I mean, I really do feel like this is one industry that can really weather the storm despite what's happening out there with the global economy, because everybody eats and they will continue to do so.
I think that's all true. Rich, I want to thank you for being on with us on American Variety. Let me give the website to the Greenbrier again. It's simple. www.greenbrier.com. And you can also look up Bocuse d'Or on Wikipedia and see a lot about the competition. Thanks for being on with us, Rich. It's been great.
Thank you so much, Court.
Thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.